This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
This is the podcast making, public transit taking, kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, son of a gun, Tim the Nerd, welcoming you to a cold version of Friends Talking Nerdy. By cold, I mean the body type of cold, the sickness cold, more than anything else. So if a cough or two slips through the editing process, the professor and I will apologize right from the start. But sitting next to me, speaking of the professor, we have the greatest legal mind in the Pacific Northwest, Professor Aubrey. How are you doing?
Hi there, Tim. Hi there. I'm okay. I am recently back from a lovely trip to the Central Cascades. Now I've returned, and this is my first full day back, and it feels very stressful to be back in the world of work and conflict and emotional investment, and all the things that make up life, I guess.
So they had to pull you out of the ski resort kicking and screaming? Like, I don't want to leave, no!
No, I mean, I think it's subtler than that. Like, I don't often recognize when something's happening, how I'm going to feel about it when something's over. So I'm often, like, happy to go home. But then I have memories that make it really nice to remember.
Well, tell the folks at home what you did over these past few days. Let's just pretend it's been, it's been a week anyway, since we're, you know, really, anyway. Tell the folks what you've been doing.
Yeah, so our last episode, of course, was on New Year's Day. So we are in the midst of a brand new year. And one of the things I have done for the last few years and did this year was go to a very sort of rustic lodge, but nothing like you would, like, by rustic, I mean janky, like just janky enough that you're like, yeah, I'm paying under $200 a night for this.
Basically, it would be swanky with my credit. It's janky with your credit.
Well, I don't.
Joke,
it's
joke.
The only thing available. Let's just say that. Like, it's a experience. It's a lodge experience, and you can't get that many other places. So
now, after having read in the news that December was the second warmest December in Oregon history, how was the skiing?
Oh, it was really great. Really great skiing. Like, it would have been easier to ski at Burning Man this year than it was at the ski trip. So that was too bad. But the good news was that we did spend a lot of time hiking. And I was able to see some things I had never seen before, including this really great hike that was very close to where we were staying. And it had like six waterfall lookouts along the trail and of two different waterfalls. And it started in the parking lot, was the top of the falls. And then you started hiking downward and you had to hike back up, that sort of thing. So saw all these beautiful, like basically saw the whole waterfall from top to bottom and followed the creek to another waterfall. And it was just gorgeous. And then the next day we took a hike to what are called Eagle Rocks, because if you go there, you see eagles. And we did see two eagles. So that was pretty cool.
I remember at the Portland Zoo here, the first time I went, was like the day I was told I was getting a divorce. So I had to go see the monkeys and the elephants that day, but they had some eagles there. And then somebody was just like, to their kid, was like, look, that's America. And I was like, no, that's an eagle. No wonder our education system sucks.
Whoa, called the eagle America?
Yeah.
That is so weird. It's like I was going by, you know, Wilsonville is a town that is, it used to be a town, but is actually now a suburb of Portland, a bedroom town of Portland. But in Woodburn, they have a big RV dealership along I-5. And at this RV dealership, they have a ginormous American flag, one thinks, from a distance. But when you get up close, it's actually a pennant. So it's a triangle shape instead of a rectangle shape. And it doesn't have the proper number of stars or bars.
I don't accept Nebraska as a state. You know?
Yeah, it was so weird. I was like, okay, so you're super patriotic, but you're not serious about it. You're more of like a casual party time decor kind of person.
Yeah, the dangerous part about people like that, though, is that they, you know, like Christians, some Christians think that, you know, they are much better than they really fucking are, you know, like the people that call themselves patriots but support overthrowing governments.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, go ahead.
Well, that, so it was a lovely time, even though there was no snow.
Now, you, before we recorded, you were actually talking about how you felt this trip was a great way of how cooperation and working together with people can take an experience that may, on the surface, appear to be, I mean, because I can imagine being upset if you go to a ski resort and there's hardly any snow. But tell the folks at home about some of that. What did you experience there, besides, obviously, the hiking?
Right. Well, the coolest thing about this trip is the, like, roughly 40 people that go every year together for New Year's and have for 26 years. So these are people who've been friends for decades and have raised their families together, and it's a very family-oriented experience. And being with those people was certainly the best part of the experience. Lots of really good times around fire, lots of time spent playing games and otherwise interacting with each other. And it was just really lovely. So on the hike to Eagle Rocks, we had about 30 people, I think, who went on that hike. Mm-hmm. So it was like an expedition. It was pretty fun.
Nice. Any other stories of cooperation that you wanted to bring up, or any other experiences you want to bring up about that trip? Put you on the spot,
baby. I mean, cooperation makes all things possible. So I'm a little confused by the question.
I was just going by what you were saying before we recorded, but you know.
What did I say?
I just said that. I like how you felt it was a great, your trip was a great segue into talking about cooperation and stuff like that.
Oh, right.
And ingenuity and all that. But apparently what's been said is said.
Yeah.
So you would not call this a disappointment, of course?
Of course not. No, it was wonderful.
Okay. And you will go again next year, hoping we won't have a repeat of the weather we had this year?
Well, so kind of fortunately, kind of unfortunately, after 26 years, the venue month is changing. So it's always been on New Year's. It is now in the future going to be sometime in February. And so this is causing quite a kerfuffle, trying to get reservations for February. They take reservations 364 days in advance. So basically you have to call about next year today. And so the people who are existing renters get the right of first refusal. So we have to figure out whether we can even get all of the cabins that are needed in February, but hopefully it will happen, and hopefully I'll get to go again because it's super fun.
Well, there you go. I'm glad you had a good time.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know who didn't have a good time during the Christmas holidays? Chris Jericho.
Oh, my goodness.
This had to be, like, wrestling has a lot of stupid moments, let's put it that way. Wrestling has people that sometimes, like, after the Chris Benoit thing, there was an added focus on the WWE by the media about, you know, wrestlers taking performance-enhancing drugs. And then you had one wrestler go, you know, specifically search out, not by request of WWE, but on his own, search out the media and, you know, proudly proclaimed, I don't do steroids. And then within a week, he promptly got busted for steroids. You know, I'm failing a wellness policy, and he got suspended for 30 days. But wrestling has a lot of stupid things, and it started on Christmas.
Okay, so tell the listeners who Chris Jericho is.
Chris Jericho is a wrestler that started his career in the early 90s, and he still currently actively wrestles. When AEW started, he was their top name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his job at that particular point was to use his name value to get, you know, the casual viewer to watch. And then, you know, they would fall in love with, you know, like your Orange Cassidy's or whatever.
Your Aubrey.
Edwards.
Aubrey Edwards.
The referee. That's right.
Badass extraordinaire.
Exactly, yeah. But ever since a couple years ago, the last time he lost the world championship, he'd been kind of going down the card, which is to be expected. I mean, he's over 50 at this particular point, and there's no reason to believe that even the most serious of athlete is going to be able to do a week to week, 52 weeks a year of professional wrestling and not have it come back in a certain way. And besides, with someone like Jericho, you don't need him there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't. I mean, a star is a star. Sometimes in wrestling, people can't miss you if you don't go away.
Right.
You know.
It's true for, you know, many types of relationships.
Exactly. But, you know, obviously with AEW, there's been a lot of kerfuffle about the CM Punk situation. And recently, CM Punk's attorney, by the name of Stephen P. New, who also...
Penis.
No.
No.
That would be a weird name. Hi, I'm want to apply for my law license. It's Stephen Penis New. Anyway, Stephen P. New, by the way, advertises on the Jim Cornette podcast.
Okay.
And
it is an attorney.
It is a legitimate attorney, does, you know, some great work with people. I guess he's actually helping sue, like, the state of Virginia over some medical issue rights or something like that. I don't know the specifics, but anyway, Stephen P. New was actually the attorney that helped essentially break the ties between CM Punk and AEW.
Okay.
And he went on a podcast and, you know, expressed that because he has an NDA and, you know, not, I mean, obviously with attorney-client privilege, he wouldn't be able to say anything his client wouldn't approve. But knowing CM Punk, if the guy had a right to say it and CM Punk was in the right, which more and more it kind of looks like that, because why would you make somebody sign a NDA if they're the one that did something wrong and you have the proof against them?
Mm-hmm.
Type of deal. Anyway, so Stephen P. New, you know, made a comment that he really couldn't comment because he and everybody involved had NDAs. That's where Chris Jericho comes in at 4 o'clock in the morning on Christmas and says, oh, I didn't sign an NDA. And then Stephen P. New responds to him on Twitter and says, you kind of did it. It's in your employee handbook. And then Jericho again at 4 o'clock in the morning on Christmas response to this guy, like, oh, I didn't sign an employee handbook. I don't have an employee handbook. Who do you think you are? And then the co-host of Jim Cornette's podcast posts a picture of the AEW employee handbook underneath. It's like, do you mean this handbook right here? But the interesting part came after that. There was a wrestling reporter by the name of Nick Houseman. You don't know who he is. I do. You know, if you're a hardcore wrestling fan, he's one of the few legit quote-unquote wrestling journalist out there. You know, a lot of times, like, if you want to look for wrestling news on the internet, there are a lot of sites that will just lie. Bold-faced lie.
Just come up with news.
Yeah, just to be able to get clicks and all that. But then, on the flip side, you do have people that do follow journalistic standards and actually, you know, get sources to confirm, you know, their stories before they put them out. Nick Houseman says something along the lines of, maybe you didn't sign an NDA, but you've made a number of people sign NDAs. And people were like, wait a minute. And then the next day, Nick Houseman had a podcast that he had to do, and he went a little further into it. He said, because, again, of journalistic standards, there was only so much he could say. Because under journalistic standards, I believe you must have, like, a minimum of two sources before, you know, something could, you know, legally be be put out there.
Gotcha.
Right. So, you know, he said that Jericho has a history. And, you know, in explaining that history, he actually compared Jericho to Harvey Weinstein. Yeah. And then from there, Twitter ended up doing its thing again. And there was a different person altogether that, you know, retweeted that video and then added, I added something along the lines of, I heard that when AEW first started, the wrestler that worked there at the time, Kylie Rae, ended up leaving the company because Chris Jericho invited her to his hotel room. She was of the understanding that it would be a team meeting. It was just Jericho. And then, you know, mysteriously, she, because when she originally left the company, it was when the company was first starting. And it was, I just found it baffling, you know, because of my long history of being a WWE fan, that Tony Khan would just come up and say, oh, she just asked and I let her go unconditionally. You would think if someone signs a contract with you and really wanted to go, you would let them go, but not necessarily be free to go to your competitor across the street for the time that you originally agreed upon.
3 months or whatever.
You know, but just up and let her go. And apparently, the word is she requested her to leave because of that incident, and an NDA was signed. And when that story was posted on Twitter, the wrestler Kylie Rae replied to it with a heart emoji. That's all she did. But by doing that, seemingly was the closest, I guess, even with an NDA, of her stating, you know, take a look at this type of deal. So that led to the recent AEW pay-per-view that Chris Jericho had a match on.
Okay.
Yeah. So he goes out there.
Wait, this is after Christmas.
This is after Christmas. It was on the 29th, a couple of days ago.
Okay.
And so Jericho goes out there. It's an 8-man tag team match. He's on the good guy side, but every time he gets tagged in and the bad guys beat him up, they just cheer the bad guys like they're the greatest heroes in the world. And the crowd at a few points chanted NDA. So it's a mess. Like, it's a mess on the one hand because, like, the initial thing that started this off of Jericho talking about the whole CM Punk thing again just seemed like somebody that was just trying to, you know, all he did not do was tag his boss on that, but he wanted his boss to see that.
Oh, sure.
You know, type of deal. And that is kind of sickening on its, sickening in a way on its own. I guess anybody, I guess, at some point could, you know, fall guilty of that. But it's the alleged, let's be fair here, the alleged stories that are, you know, slowly coming out now about him that are just like, ugh. Another one. You know, not that I thought Jericho was a paragon of virtue. He's human. But just like, wow, especially too from a company, AEW, that when they started out, went out of their way to talk about, you know, hey, we're going to support the LGBTQ community. We have this special thing so, you know, people with autism can not be overwhelmed. So we'll have special things for them that they can use when they're watching the show type of deal, which is all great and good. But the moment one of the wrestlers, the male wrestlers, wants to invite a female wrestler to his room, if that male wrestler in question is the star of the show, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. You know, again, this is alleged. If it does come out at some point that it turns out not to be true, you're going to hear it from us, and we'll go from there. Knowing Jericho's history, though, it's one of those things that it wouldn't shock me. And it's really, really disappointing. It really is disappointing. Like, again, I mean, he comes from that era where I guess it was more, more accepted, but just wow. And by the way, Tony Khan was asked point blank, was Chris Jericho ever investigated for sexual assault? And his answer was, I don't respond to unsubstantiated rumors, which, you know, was not the answer to the question that was asked, and only makes things worse for him.
Wait, what was the question again?
Has Chris Jericho ever been investigated by AEW for sexual assault?
And he said,
I don't respond to unsubstantiated rumors.
But isn't that saying no?
No, it's, but it's not though. Like mm-hmm. it's a yes or no question. You know, you don't have to respond to it because, yeah, maybe it was investigated and maybe it was found out that he was completely innocent. But by not directly answering it, it's this is just the last thing they need in the year that their current television deal comes up and in the year that the WWE is real close to, you know, the sniping, you know, one of their spots on the Warner Brothers networks, because apparently the WWE is talking with Warner Brothers about possibly moving Monday Night Raw to either TBS or TNT, the home of AEW. Mm-hmm. And if the WWE goes to TBS or TNT, AEW is going to be gone. There's no way the WWE is going to have shared space with another company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I hope this gets sorted out in quick time, okay? Like I said, while it wouldn't shock me if Jericho ended up, if it comes out that he was very much guilty of doing what he did, I feel you gotta let the things play out, right? You know, because at this point, it is still just an allegation.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
it's in that moment when it's really hard to know what to do. I mean, most recently, this has happened with Russell Brand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you're following that at all, but he's been accused by, I think, dozens of women at this point who say they were sexually assaulted by him.
Yeah.
And you could believe it from everything you saw about him. Like, he was always over the top sexual with every woman he met.
Yeah.
And so you could see it happening. It wasn't surprising. But at the same time, there's a period during which you don't know if it's going to be corroborated. You don't know, you know, the details are going to come out that make you change your mind about it.
Yeah.
So I think it's hard until all of the facts have been discovered.
With the media the way it is, I mean, they want to get those big stories out right away. Nick Houseman, like, while if this turns out to be true, I'm glad he kind of did what he did. On the flip side, it doesn't scream like the most ethical move a reporter should do, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because think of how many reporters that are out there that do no legitimate dirt on famous people that just legally are not able to do so. Because they don't have, because you have to think about lawsuits too,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and reporters don't necessarily make that much.
Mm-mm.
So you want to be careful because he could, you know, Jericho could easily sue this guy. And Jericho still may be in the wrong, but he could sue this guy and still end up winning.
Or even if he didn't win, he would cost this guy a lot of money.
Get it to a point to where, yeah, he would have to settle for something, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... Our justice system sucks.
It really does.
Yeah, it really does. So this is a story we will keep you updated on. It's just another bunch of craziness from AEW that they don't need, especially with dwindling audiences and dwindling television ratings. You know, I don't want them to go away. There needs to be a minimum of two national touring companies out there, because the more there is opportunity for people to earn their money in wrestling on a big stage, the more opportunities there are, just the more people that are going to be involved and the better wrestling will ultimately get.
Sure. I mean, I think that's what we find with monopolies is that we pay too much for a terrible product.
Yeah. And I want AEW to succeed because, you know, maybe they will never become a business the size of WWE, but by putting out a product nationally, they are still competing with them in a way. And, you know, it's good when Cody Rhodes or CM Punk debuted in WWE, it was a great moment. And when you have a major WWE name debut in AEW, like Adam Copeland, who wrestled for a majority of his career in the WWE, went over to AEW because his former tag team partner Christian Cage works in AEW now and wanted the last bit of his career with his friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a big moment, and that was exciting to see. It's exciting when, you know, people can go to different shows because it's new stories, new whatever. And, you know, when you see these easily preventable mistakes, you know, and I'm not talking about the allegations here, folks. I'm talking about the 4 o'clock drunken text, the drunken tweets that just didn't need to be said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this makes the company look bad. And if the company's looking bad, advertisers will eventually become aware of it. Fans themselves will stop going, as the numbers are showing, they kind of are right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not that it's not reversible, but, you know, when it's a downhill slide, you got to try to stop that slide. And stuff like this doesn't help. All right, how about we take a bit of a breather and kick it over to one of our friends at the Deluxe Edition Network?
I would love that. Let's hear from them.
All right, sit back, relax, and enjoy this message.
Have you ever watched the news and wished that you could see something more positive, or looked online and saw all the aggravation and anger and hatred out there and thought to yourself, why can't I just see more positive things in my life? Hi, I'm Mike Rathbun, and I'm the host of the Kindness Matters podcast. Every week, we promise to bring you stories that will uplift you and motivate you and inspire you to see the kindness and be the kindness that this world needs more of. Tune in, the Kindness Matters podcast, with me, your host, Mike Rathbun.
In the month of December, there were 1.7 million episodes of podcasts produced and released to the public.
That's a whole lot of podcasts.
Damn right it is. And the reason I bring this statistic up, and I do thank a new newsletter that I've subscribed to called Pod News. It's an industry newsletter, apparently. the reason I bring this up is because of our main event this week. Our main event, we are going to be talking about a great article that we discovered on Psychology Today called 7 Effective Strategies to Overcome Constant Self-Comparison. And the reason I brought up that statistic is because of comparison reasons. You know, when you are engaging in a creative activity like this, it is easy to compare yourself to other people and to think, since I am not at the level where they are, there must be something wrong with me. You gotta fight that. You know, that doesn't mean that you are immune from criticism by any means. You know, there's a reason this show keeps evolving, you know, over the years. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we do you know, shape things up when we do either realize that something's not working, or, you know, if, you know, just whatever, you know, we change.
Yeah, we have definitely evolved over time. And I think the show improves over time. And sometimes we have failed experiments, but, you know, it's all a learning process.
Indeed. Indeed. But when it comes to comparison, especially self-comparison, I mean, everybody gets guilty of that. And it's easy to find yourself, you know, I mean, like, put it like this, you know, society expects a 47-year-old guy to not be in my position,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it would be easy for me to, and I am guilty of this, of being guilty of comparing myself to other people and thinking, since I am not there, there must be something wrong with me. And that is not good, because the only experience I have is my experience. I'm not somebody else, so I can't really, you know, I can't compare them to me. It would make no sense, really, because even if we were born on the same day, you know, it's like everybody has different ways of growing up, I guess.
Sure. I mean, you get into the whole nature versus nurture debate, right? Anytime you start talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I think, neither here nor there this evening. I think what's important is that we're talking about
overcoming it.
Overcoming the thought process.
Yeah, yeah.
So not like becoming a CEO of Microsoft tomorrow, right? Like, we're not looking for those kinds of improvements. But what you can do through the power of changing your thought processes is to sort of build new ways of thinking about things. And that's going to help you in every scenario that you're in. If you are able to recognize that you're having a thought about something that is negative, you can turn that around into something that is at least more affirmative.
Yeah, because, I mean, the way you think is a habit in and of itself. And, it, you know, if you are in a bad frame of mind at a particular point in your life, it will take work to break yourself out of that. So the article in question is written by Dr. Liz White. And what we will do is go through the bullet points here, read them off to you, and then comment on them. Did you want to start us off?
I'd love to.
All right.
Okay, number one, recognize that comparing is a habit. Recognize that comparing yourself is a habit you have developed over your lifetime, and it isn't your fault. From the early days of our schooling, we become aware that our grades are the same, similar to or different from our peers, and a sense of competition can quickly develop. Millennials and Gen Zs have grown up with the social media and the ability to see other people's curated lives in a split second, which constantly invites the opportunity to compare. Older generations, like Tim and I, without access to smartphones or the internet, did not have this available. When we identify something as a habit and are honest about its impact on our self-esteem and mental health, we are in a much better position to change it. Start by noting down how many times you compare yourself throughout the day. You may be surprised at the number. Okay, so this is a mindfulness exercise in noticing what you're thinking, feeling, experiencing when it's happening. So I think many, many of us have trouble even doing that, like the first step of this, how to stop comparing yourself to others. The first is you've got to really get to know yourself.
But what if you suck? No. You are right. You are right. Because you get so, I mean, your own inner voice is going to be the voice you hear more than anybody else's. And when something is routine, you don't necessarily know that it's wrong. It's like somebody that bought a car that, you know, had something wrong with it, but didn't realize there was something wrong with it and just, you know, did their thing, you know? And you have to, you have to have enough honesty with yourself to be able to have that conversation to say, my line of thinking right now about how I think about myself in terms of comparing myself to others is just not healthy. And maybe doing something along the lines of, you know, at least just once for one day, notating the times that you do that, maybe you would be surprised at that number. I mean, it's one of those exercises that kind of sounds cute, but I could also see it being one of those things that where someone could be cynical like me and say it's too cute, but then give it a try and like, whoa, 47 times in 3 hours? Shit.
Yeah, I think that we would all be surprised at how often we're critical of ourselves.
All right. Shall I go on with number two?
Yes, please. Number two.
Numero dos. Yeah. It for the international crowd. Do you know why you compare yourself to others, apart from growing up in a society and culture that invites it? We compare ourselves to others for many reasons, and knowing your reason will be helpful when managing it. Some common causes are below: to better yourself, to fit in, to reduce uncertainty about yourself or your situation, to punish or criticize yourself. As a starting point, each time you compare yourself to someone else, note what the comparison was, e.g. lifestyle, body image, career or study, appearance, etc. Over time, you will see a theme that will help you identify why social comparison is habitual for you. I did like how they did point out here that some of them aren't necessarily wrong. What do I mean? The bettering yourself deal. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, how many people have like a mentor or somebody that, you know, they think, oh, that person's cool and I want to be like them. And then that urge that impels that person number two to work towards, you know, becoming good themselves. I mean, how many guitar players over history have been a fan of a player from an older generation and then gone on to do something, you know, just as good or better on their own in their own current generation? So I think I liked how they did point out here that it seems like the whole idea of comparing yourself in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just important to take note of why you are making that comparison.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a huge difference between that and the last option, which is to punish or criticize yourself. And I think, you know, people who are prone to this kind of internal dialogue, what they're often doing is criticizing themselves. I think even if they're seeking to better themselves, comparison, even if it's your mentor, this idea that because they did it, I must be able to do it.
Yeah,
or I must be able to do it in the way they did it or to the success level that they achieved. That's not a requirement for life.
Exactly. And also beating yourself. I mean, how many people have bought a musical instrument, let's say, and after a couple of months, because they don't sound like a master of the craft at that particular instrument, they decide I'm bad at what I do, not realizing that everybody grows in music in their own way, one, and two, you don't need to make a career out of it to be good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's the whole, the seed of comparison being a sense of not being whole or fulfilled within yourself. Because even in your example of I'm looking to other guitar players for inspiration or to emulate them, why am I even playing the guitar?
Why do anything?
Right. Why am I doing anything? And I think that gets back to the social pyramid engineering that's always going on when humans are interacting with each other. Anywho.
All right. How about you go on to number three?
All right. Number three. Comparing yourself to others is not only a habit, but a habit that has become automatic. You probably don't realize you're doing it. Thus, one way to break the comparison habit is to bring awareness every time you do it. You must catch the comparison in real time to do this. This won't be easy initially, and you may find that you only realize you compared yourself to someone after it happened. That's okay. Your ability to recognize the comparison thoughts will improve with time and practice. Below are some ways to do this. Ah, here's an unhelpful comparison thought, you might say to yourself. Or, I just noticed I was comparing myself to X. Or, my mind is doing that thing where it compares me to someone. Or, no thanks, brain. I don't need your comparisons today. Or finally, I'm noticing that I'm having the thought that X is better than me. Yeah, so, I mean, I think this is a great practice, this idea of looking for what are the times when I have experienced comparing myself to other people. And recognizing that in the moment and being able to say, I'm comparing myself to them. And boy, it's making me feel bad about myself. I can even go that far and notice like, oh, and when I do that, it doesn't feel good to me. It doesn't mean that I have solved this problem. I absolutely have not solved this problem. I still get caught up comparing myself with other people. It still continues to cause me, you know, discomfort and distress. So it's something, at least, that I have to work on a lot.
And I get the working process. I mean, I know with me, like, if I get angry or upset or something like that, over time, I've built some halfway decent skills to not necessarily prevent me from ever doing it because I'm human, stuff's going to happen, but it's about being able to, you know, at least accept and run through your head what the events actually are and not what your emotions think they are. It takes work to train your brain to think that way so that you can, you know, in the case of something like anger, decide whether it is something that truly deserves you to be upset or if you handle it wrong.
Right.
You know, type of deal. And yeah, same thing with this. If you are finding yourself constantly doing it, having those, you know, reminders, maybe you don't necessarily have to say it out loud, because if you're at the grocery store and saying that, that may look a little weird. But having some form of, you know, some ding, some, you know, momentary clarity of insight or whatever that you recognize that this behavior is wrong, the more you do it, the better you will be at catching it before it becomes a real problem. But again, just like anything else, you are human. You're going to have times to where no matter what, with self-comparison, you're going to beat yourself up, or, you know, for no good reason.
Of course you are. It's part of, like, just being human, being critical of oneself.
Yeah. All right. Shall I go on with the next one?
Yeah.
All right. Number four, choose what you do with the comparison. Once you know when you are comparing, you can choose what you do with it. You can either take it on board, believe it to be true, or not. After all, it is just a thought that, like any other, and we can choose what thoughts we buy into based on whether they are helpful to us and help us move toward the life we want to live. This is a key concept in acceptance and commitment therapy and the idea of diffusion, that we can learn the skill of diffusing or unhooking from the thoughts that don't serve us. And this does kind of tie into, the number two one that I read? Yeah, because what you do with that comparison will matter. I mean, because if it's a benign comparison, something that, you know, is not going to negatively affect your mental health, maybe you do one thing with it. But if it's, you know, comparing your job status with, you know, Elon Musk's or whatever, that is out of your control. it really is. And, you know, obsessing about something like that, about being able to get all that money, would just be pointless and be detrimental to not only your mental health, but over time, your physical health.
You know how this comes up most often for me is in the context of jealousy. So I find that if I'm feeling jealous and I ask myself, why am I feeling jealous? It's almost always because I'm comparing myself or my experience to somebody else or their experience. And it's not measuring up in some way. My whatever is not as good as their whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I feel threatened that the thing that I have, that I think I have, I'm going to lose that thing. For me, when I realize that I'm feeling jealous because I'm comparing myself to someone else, what I want to be able to do is to not take on other people's expectations and ideas about me, and instead to accept that my life is the only one I get to control. I'm not in charge of somebody else. I'm not entitled to their time. And I want to live a life that embodies those ideals. And so to do that, I have to experience jealousy. I have to figure out why. I have to be willing to talk about it. And yeah, I mean, I think that's the price. That's the work that then you get to enjoy the fruits of when you get to just sit back and enjoy your life.
But adding on to that too, by having that defense mechanism to be able to take that step back to think about it, I'm sure you would probably agree, it would give you a better footing if you did feel that this was something you needed to discuss with somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, like if someone's actions were unintentionally causing this and you not saying anything would cause those actions to continue, then you want to speak up, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think, you know, that can be difficult depending on where somebody is at in this range of levels of comparison. I love what you just said, Tim, which is that you have to speak up for yourself. I think that's the follow-up behavior to what we're talking about, just with noticing, recognizing what the thought is, trying to change the thought so that it isn't like, they're better than me, but it's that, you know, I'm a unique person who's special in my own way, or whatever kind of thought you can turn it around to. But then to take it even further is to say to the person who you're having these feelings around, like, I'm comparing myself to you, or I'm comparing myself to your other lovers, or I'm comparing myself to the person who's really good at their job at work, etc. To be able to talk to that person and say, I'm experiencing jealousy, or I'm experiencing comparing myself to this other person. And the goal there is standing up for oneself. Because if you don't ever say anything about it, you have no way of coming back and saying, you know, that person didn't do what they needed to do. Like, that person caused me to feel jealousy.
And I can tell you from personal experience, and I've been over it many, many times on the show, not telling somebody that what they do is hurting you, it is only going to make it hurt that much worse over time. And then, like a pressure cooker, you're going to explode in somebody that doesn't know you're upset at them.
Yeah, because you're essentially lying to them. You're pretending like you're not bothered when you are actually bothered. And so the challenge is to say something about the fact that you're bothered, maybe propose a solution.
I'm bothered.
The terror of that is that they're going to walk away, or they're going to say, no, you're not worth it to me. You're not worth it to me to try and just understand where you're coming from and have a dialogue with you about what might work for me and you in this situation. If I'm not willing to do that, good riddance, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've had plenty of instances over the years, yeah, to where, whether it be like the ex-wife or whatever, if you don't have that talk at some point, it's going to blow up in your face.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not just talking about jealousy here, but it's about other things as well. The negative connotations to comparing yourself to other people. If there is a person that is in your life and you're constantly doing that, you know, and also too, on the flip side, maybe they are doing something that is kind of unintentionally stoking the fires of that too. Have the respect for the person to talk to them. You know, it can be real tough. And if you gotta, if you gotta find a way to, even through a chemical purposes, get yourself up to get that courage to talk, you do it, you know?
Wow. I mean, I think this is just really hitting on things that are really difficult for me, because that is the idea of that you have to talk to everybody to resolve conflicts is, and not just carry those conflicts with you, is frightening to me, because I've never lived my life that way. But just like I was saying before, it's an attractive, I want to be that way. And so in order to be that way, I have to accept the fact that it's going to be really uncomfortable for me to express my boundaries to people, because I'm going to have to assume that they care. I'm going to have to assume they're going to be willing to have the conversation with me, which means that they're, you know, basically a decent human being. Right? I'm not asking for much. Just hear me out.
Obviously, otherwise I wouldn't be here. All right. Did you want to go on to number 5?
Yeah, let's go on to number 5. Good choice.
Get more jokes, jerk.
Okay. Manage your inner critic.
Speaking of. Mm-hmm.
When you don't feel good enough compared to others, it's easy to spiral into self-criticism and self-judgment. When you open that social media app and see the people you follow living their best lives, your inner critic can have a field day and bombard you with self-critical thoughts that only serve to lower your mood and your opinion of yourself. One way to deal with this is to adopt a mindset of managing your inner critic. Notice when it shows up and step back from it. You do not need to engage with it or believe everything it says about you. Okay, this is great. Often our inner critic likes to beat up on us. Sometimes it's a way of numbing ourselves to other emotion. So it's important to not engage with the things that make you feel like you're a bad person.
And I am glad that they do include social media here, because with its multifaceted as social media can be, you know, sometimes it can negatively affect your mental health, especially when it comes to something like comparing yourself to other people. And that, if that means regulating how much you use social media, you just do it.
You know, I have been, as you know, I haven't been using Facebook, for example, very much. I've been using X a tiny bit, Blue Sky a tiny bit, but mostly I've just not been doing social media. And boy, I wouldn't miss it. It wasn't actually bringing anything to my life. So that's what I notice most about not having it, is that I don't care.
And for me, for show purposes, I do have somewhat of a presence, but compared to years past, I mean, my social media presence is way down, and I don't apologize for that at all. I mean, if being on social media less means there's less chance for the average stranger out there to listen to this show, then so be it. We'll get people listening other ways, and like I said, if I get hit by a bus tomorrow, this is still going to go down as the most successful thing I've ever done. I don't want to get hit by a bus tomorrow, mind you. I want us to be financially successful. You get my point, though.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, managing that inner critic can be tough because, again, it's about building. I think the first building block is being able to identify when it's a problem and being able to tell yourself that it is a problem and what you are doing, you got to either redirect or stop. You know, that is important because, I mean, you can just think, I don't want to do this anymore. But if you don't put the work in, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, we play the scripts that we've learned and we know them really well. By the time we're nearly 50 years old,
yeah,
they play easily and readily. The consequences of the song, though, are not fun. It's not a good time. It's a terrible time.
Yeah, by the time I'm 90, I'm going to be a great guy.
You know what I'm saying, though? Like, yeah. If you want to feel better about your life, you have to surround yourself with positivity and people who are positive and who don't keep you in the same place, the powerless position that you feel like you're in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I encounter that too, because like anybody, I'm my own worst critic. I'm the only person that knows every bad thing I've ever done, and that gets thrown at me in my head every single day. And so I think I'm a bit of a scumbag, but then you have people like you, like, you know, my friend Lisa, other people, Tim, you're a great guy, you're this, you're that, and sometimes I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are these people saying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you got to fight that because they are right. You know, like you, my friend Lisa, you're seeing the me of today, not the summation of every good and bad thing I've ever done.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, you are right in saying that today. And that's all you have. That's all you have is today, this moment. You know, I mean, you are the summation of all your parts, but if you have bad stuff that you know, that happened in your past that is affecting you today, that is in your past. You can get past that trauma.
Yep. You can. Mm-hmm. You can. It's really hard work, right? And it doesn't happen consistently even when you start doing it. Like, you might do it and be like, oh my God, I totally did it. And I totally feel great about it.
Then a week later.
Then a week later, same scenario. You go back into that old script. And it's so easy to have your inner critic say, you know, you thought you had this conquered. And obviously you don't. And you just got to reframe the whole paradigm. Like, I'm not trying to conquer something. I'm trying to accept things.
Speaking of that, how about I go on to number 6?
Yes, please.
All right. Broaden your view of yourself. Being stuck in constant unhelpful comparisons makes you feel less than, so your focus on your flaws, imperfections, and limitations becomes honed in. This is especially true if you have low self-esteem, as you are likely to experience a lot of negative thoughts about yourself in general. No kidding. That was me, fam. Look at me like that. When our attention is narrowed this way, we tend to discount other information that might challenge this negative view of ourselves. For example, winning a prize may be discounted as lucky rather than ability. Therefore, broadening your view of yourself is essential as it helps you move to a more balanced view of yourself. It can be helpful to write down a list of things you like about yourself, your strengths, or things you are good at. If you are finding this difficult, consider what a trusted friend or family member would say are your strengths. Good thoughts here, and kind of like tying it into the podcast. You know, what I think has been most beneficial for me has been keeping the mindset of, I want to make the best Tim Jasmine type of podcast I can. because the only person I have to compare my podcasting abilities to is myself or the people that are my partners in this endeavor, like yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't compare myself to anybody else, you know, whether it be a big name like a Joe Rogan or, you know, some other people that are podcasting out of their homes on the same topic we are, just like us. You know, and they just happen to get 100 people, you know, that listen per week compared to what we get. You know, can't compare. There's no reason to compare. I should be happy for those people's success, while I should be happy for my success, because even though our audience is not the biggest in the world by any means, we have an audience.
Yeah, we do.
It's there. And as long as it's there, and you have a creative endeavor like this that is constantly putting out content each and every week, you don't know when somebody's going to bite. Think of how many stories of bands that have played bars, you know, for years, and then they were just happened to be playing that one day, somebody that worked at a record company showed up. Boom, they got noticed. And then they were able to go on from there. You know, that could theoretically happen to us. You know, if it doesn't, it doesn't. That doesn't make us a failure. That doesn't make this a bad show. It just, our experience, it is essentially trying your best to reframe it. And when you reframe it, to acknowledge the positives while also being very open with criticism as well. Because again, we're not exactly doing 3-hour shows where we have a full conversations like this and then review an album anymore. You know, it's like we, you know, when it comes to the podcast, we've seen what works and what doesn't and works from there. And that's all you can do. Just keep on working to improve yourself and just accept that it will take time and celebrate your successes no matter how small you think they are.
Yeah, you know, all that good advice about step back and enjoy the moment, all of that. And one thing that might help is our number 7, which is to curate and limit your social media. And we were just talking about this a minute ago, but I think this makes a different point. Mm-hmm. So one thing to remember with social media is that you control your use. Again, like social comparison, it's an automatic habit. We scroll waiting in a queue, on the bus, on our lunch break. The list could go on and on. But if social media tends to trigger social comparison for you, start limiting your time on it. In addition, curate your feed so that the posts you are exposed to positively impact your well-being and mental health. Okay, this is great. So what you want to think about here is things that have been talked about on the show a lot with regard to social media is, you know, it's okay to block people. It's okay to turn their notifications off. It's okay to not see them in your feed. It's okay for you to choose what is going through your social media. And it just because Billy played golf with you one time in high school doesn't mean that you're performing for Billy. And so why, you know, I think I don't understand it as a means of dealing with strangers or acquaintances. Like, to me, it makes sense when it is a small group, like a family group or a friend group or, you know, a smaller group to have sort of real-time communication. I think that's great. But just the performative nature of this is what I did last weekend is always going to invite comparison.
Which is unfortunate. But I mean, as the article did say, you know, curating your feed is a good thing. What I found works too, like somebody at Apple did this, and yeah, I wasn't doing it at the time and I should have listened to him. He said he would not follow anybody that he worked with. And I didn't, for, you know, I had been, you know, in any job previous, you know, during the social media era, I was always friending everybody I worked with, when in fact I should have been following his advice, you know, not, again, to say that, you know, it's bad thing to have, you know, good friends that you meet, you know, through work, but the person that is a part-time person that works one day a week that you run into is not really your friend. You don't need to put, you know, you don't need to put them on your social media, you know, to find out that, you know, they have ignorant views on stuff and, you know, make you pissed off. Curate who is on your list. And like you said, yeah, don't be afraid to ban people or don't take a friend, you know, take a friend request. If you have a family member that, you know, you don't agree with politically, for example, that posts a lot about politics on social media, following them is just going to lead to, you know, headaches. It just is. And it's just best for everybody because it is social media, these people do have the right to put whatever they want out. Who am I to tell them that they can't post something that I disagree with? The best thing to do is just don't include them on your social media feeds. And just try to... social media was not what it was advertised to be. It's just become a many tentacled monster that does have some good elements to it, but just more and more you're just finding out like just how nefarious and evil these companies are. And if the revolution does happen, hopefully they go to Facebook headquarters first, you know. Something like that. But at the end of the day, folks, the reason we brought up this article here, I mean, well, wow, we're in a great mood today. The reason we brought up this article here is, you know, as always, we want to promote good mental health practices, and good mental health practices take time. They do. And it takes not beating yourself up. I mean, take risk. If by comparing yourself to someone, you know, something you do, something that causes a problem, take full responsibility for your actions, I guess. But just understand that we're all human. We're all in this moment called life, and all we can do is the best we can at this moment. Just, it's important to put in that work. It will take work, but if you do put it in, you will see results.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jim.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to say to all of our friends at home?
Just, I hope you have a great week, and we will see you next week.
All right. Each Monday, we'll have something in this podcast space to entertain your ear holes. Until we meet again, we bid you adieu.
Farewell.
And goodbye.
Subscribe to Friendstalking Nerdy on iTunes, the Google Play Music Store, as well as Spotify. Remember to support Friendstalking Nerdy on Patreon. Goodbye, darling.